morning or afternoon, everybody. This is Catherine Spires, back for another week of Smart Mouth. This week, our guest is a comedian, a writer, an actor, Jenny Yang. Hi.
Hi, Catherine. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay! I love it when people are excited to be here. That's so good. When I was thinking about your job title, you know the phrase multi-hyphenate?
I know, it's gross.
You're a multi-hyphenate.
It's gross.
Well, it's not. You must have so much energy.
I did have a lot of energy growing up. Mm-hmm. I'm actually chilled out more now than I'm an adult.
Wow.
But yes, I do have a lot of energy. But it also means that people don't know this. I do have to physically unplug. I go on sleep mode.
Really?
I do. I dock when I get home.
Well, when you dock, do you sleep really well?
I sleep hard.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm so jealous.
Yeah. And then I'll just zone out. Mm-hmm. So I've taught myself to, at this point, to not get burnt out, because I used to do that.
Right.
I used to sort of burn too hot.
Right.
And then just burn out. That was very college of me.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, time to be an adult. Got to manage your own energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that's definitely the story of my life. But yeah, I would say that people have described me as high energy.
Well, I mean, but it's like out of jealousy.
Yeah.
Because you get so much done.
I do.
And you're always around.
I'm a very productive person.
Yeah. And you're like supportive of other people. Your Instagram stories last night were at a comedy show.
I was performing.
Oh, but so still you got Lizzie Cooperman's hilarious bit about being sex positive. It is so out of control. She is so funny.
Yes.
So see, you're out there supporting other people.
I
as
do.
Well.
I do. I think, you know, one thing I learned early on, being the youngest of three kids with two older, much older brothers, and sort of being the most Americanized of my family. Mm-hmm. I've always had to be very independent and figure out America kind of by myself.
Yeah, okay.
And so I've always really valued being able to be in community with other people, and like when other people help you out and vice versa.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's
and
really
so
nice.
That's, I think I've always thought that way. Like if I were to, number one, I'm a natural self-promoter.
Mm, great.
So, you know.
You're living in the perfect time for that.
And, you know, it can be gross, but what helps me to feel confident that I'm within my values and not being gross is that I also spend a lot of energy trying to, I don't know, lift up other people's work.
Right.
and be a part of that, you know?
And I saw a tweet recently that was like, everyone from here on out, stop feeling gross about promoting.
Yeah.
Because we're living in this stupid gig economy.
Yes.
We're our own like PR admin, accounts
everything.
Payable department. Like we have to do all of it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
And I think it's true. Like I've asked some of my friends before when I'm like posting a lot about like, oh, our podcast like made it in this, but we were nominated and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is it too much? They were like, ah, we get it.
Yeah. I think we need to just, you know, we just need to get over it. You
yeah.
know, people who are writers who wanted to be writers or producers who are behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
they're forced to come out of their shell.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
And that's just the nature of the game. I never really liked selfies, but I know for a fact that if I put my face on a selfie, more
that's
people
right.
will look at it.
That's
so
right.
Sometimes I've just messed with that.
Yep.
When there is a big immigration issue with DACA, I posted the most thirst trappy photo I've ever posted of me in a bikini.
Love it.
You know,
you're getting your message out there.
It was the only time I've ever done that.
That's so awesome.
And I was just like, LOL, DACA.
Yeah. You did it for a reason, a cause.
You know, so I feel like just because social media is the nature of the beast is a certain way, it's just a tool.
Yes.
And I don't think we need to be, you know, victims to the culture that's around it, that
mm-hmm.
we can actually use the tool for our ends, right?
I like
if
that.
If we care about certain things.
I like that. And I agree completely. I'm starting to get more comfortable with it. You
yes.
know, the whole like journalism background. I'm like, no, you tell the story, you aren't the story. But now I'm just like every morning it's my mantra. I wake up and be like, I am the story. I am the story.
It's so contrary
yeah,
to
I
most
know.
People's training.
Yes.
Like when you're training in an old school way. Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally.
But whatever. We're all moving on. It's a new mindset overall.
More selfies. People want to see that blonde
well,
hair.
Isn't it? Oh, you talk about my blonde hair a lot. Do you want to go out?
Oh my God. Let's do it. It's amazing hair.
Thank you. You have
it's
amazing
thick and
hair
lustrous.
Too. Oh my God, you too. Yay. Also, I love that you can rock bangs. I could
Thank
never.
You. This is just being Asian, I think.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah.
We grew up with bowl cuts. You know, we've been trained to have just excess hair hitting our eyelids, just replicating the oppression of expectations from an immigrant family. No, I'm kidding.
No, you could get paid to write that article. Don't give it away here because you could make money for doing that.
I need to pitch more. Yeah, I do want to write more essays.
It takes so long. So when we were talking before we started recording and you were talking about like your experience like learning about America, you mentioned tuna noodle casserole 4,000 times. So I feel like this is important and I want to hear the story. Which, by the way, before you get into it, I want to say that my family, we called it tuna noodle casseroodle. So it's really hard for me to say it like in an adult way.
That's so fun. Yeah, I mean, I love telling people, listen, okay, let me back it up. People get really surprised, and I didn't realize this until I like went to college, I think, mm-hmm. when I tell them that like the first time I had ever eaten a casserole was a tuna noodle casserole, my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And it was, I was in band, I was, okay. among other things, and it was a parents booster club like little function. And one of the parents, who was a white parent, brought tuna noodle casserole, and I ate it, and I didn't know what it was. And I literally turned to, like, the people around me and said, what is this? This is so good. And they started laughing at me.
Right, right.
Because I was like, it was so sincere. It was so pure. It was like...
I think tuna noodle casserole is weird. There's a lot of disparate elements.
See,
so I don't think that going into it not knowing what it is or even tasting it and not knowing what it is strange.
Really, to me, it wasn't weird. Like, I know even, like, you know, white Americans who are, like, grossed out by it. But, like, because of the cream of mushroom soup, I guess, that you use?
With fish.
With fish, right.
That's so, that's like an unlikely, let's say, pairing.
Right. I have realized that that's a thing with Americans, which is like a pairing of seafood and cream is weird.
Us white people get squeamish about
seafood and cream.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have weird feelings about seafood and fishiness. Mm-hmm. So I think that might have taken that away. It was more like, cool, tuna and this creamy thing with pasta. Yum.
Yeah.
What is this on top? Like crunchy saltine crackers?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it seems weird, but also one of the hamburger helpers is actually tuna helper.
Yes.
Like it's, I mean, it's I think it's a weird dichotomy. Like it's gross, but we love it also.
Yeah, so I didn't grow up with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so it blew my mind and I was like, wow, this is so yummy and creamy and delicious. And, you know, I had hamburger helper in high school once.
Okay.
We just bought it on a whim because it was like 99 cents or something.
Right, right.
And my mom was like, ooh, this is a lot of MSG. It's very good. I was like, yeah, this is pretty tasty, Mom.
Yeah.
But we're not going to make this a regular thing. We're going to eat just like rice and stir-fried vegetables and stewed meats. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it blew my mind. And I think looking back when I tell that story because I feel like sometimes people underestimate how immigrant I am sometimes because they might think that I'm very Americanized. And then
sure,
I'm like,
yeah.
Yo. I'm fluent in Chinese. I ate Chinese food every day. You know?
I didn't
have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches until I was in the seventh grade.
That's funny. But I also get that because I think peanut butter and jelly is like, meh.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. But yeah, it took like my white friend Samantha Chris to like feed me a piece of her peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
What up, Samantha?
I know. What up, Samantha?
Sharing the culture.
I know.
No, you are extremely Californian.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah, through and through.
I talk Californian. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Southern California with like Latinos, Asians, Black folks, Pacific Islanders.
Southern California is so cool.
It is pretty awesome.
There's just like a lot going on. I like it. So do you feel like casseroles are like a signature part of American food culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Using the oven. I think that's the main thing.
Ah,
it's just using the oven, period.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, I know there's use of, like, tandoor ovens in, like, parts of, you know, Asia and, like, China. But, like, no, man.
Right.
Using the oven was, like, weird to us. Growing up, we store our pots and pans in the oven.
Okay.
Dude, you talk to almost any, like, a lot of Asian immigrant kids. There's a joke where I mentioned that. And they whoop and yell.
Because
they're like, because no one talks about it, but it is this thing.
Okay.
We store stuff in there. We also don't use our dishwasher. It's a dish rack, you know? So, like, because there's some weird ideas around the waste of energy and resources, and it's just better to just hand wash things or... But yeah, oven cooking was not at all existent until my mom taught herself to do some like Asian baked goods.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started using the oven. But other than that, we stored like our frying pans in there and like pots.
Oh, that's so funny. I never thought about like the specific oven element of it, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So the idea that you throw food into the oven for your meal was very weird to us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Interesting. Interesting. And I also feel like casseroles are often a way for us to use potatoes or potato products.
See, and we didn't grow up with that as a staple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you heard of funeral potatoes?
I've heard of it, but I don't recall what it is.
So it's really just, it's a potato-based casserole, often just straight-up tater tots with a cream of mushroom soup. And it's, it come, you know, in the Midwest, they call it hot dish.
Yes. Oh, my God, I've had tater tot hot dish. It's so good.
I know. What wouldn't be good about it? It's amazing. In Utah, they call it funeral potatoes because it's like the dish that you bring to funerals so frequently.
As a comfort food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love, too, that it's potato-based and then you also sprinkle potato chips across the top.
Yeah. I think
delicious.
I love it. I feel like, you know, in America, we're not as used to carb on carb as I am in like some Asian foods.
Oh.
But I feel like, you know, the casserole is the place where we can really
indulge. We party
in that.
When it comes to casseroles.
Starch on starch on starch.
Yeah, yeah. It's wild.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. So another thing that I feel like I haven't actually contemplated what I'm about to say at all, I feel like is very American is the salad bar.
Yes.
Do you agree with me on that?
I would
agree
with you.
Just like off the top of your head.
It's the most American. It was the most American thing that my family could think of when we had access to it when we moved here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So not to pigeonhole you.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of content out there, video and written, about East Asian immigrants coming to America and Sizzler being the biggest thing in some sense. Like the biggest night out.
Yeah,
the
I thing- can explain.
Okay, yes, please do.
Listen, you know, I haven't read these articles or videos that you're speaking of, but I have a pretty good hunch why. I know for my family, you know, when you're trying to make ends meet as an immigrant family, Sizzler, with its effectiveness and their coupons in the ads that we got, was a huge marketing success for them.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, for us to have, number one, coupons was a very American thing.
Okay.
And so we're like, what? You just have to turn this thing in and you'll get a discount? What the heck? Right? So that's number one.
Uh-huh.
Number two, and it's all you can eat. So you see all you can eat and a discount.
Oh, yeah.
And add on to that, you know, for a while, it's less so now, but growing up, you know, if it was like the 80s and 90s, salads were weird in Taiwan. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
Much less like China, like the mainland China. Taiwan was where things were more like a little more westernized.
Mm-hmm.
And that was weird to have raw vegetables, uncooked vegetables.
Oh.
You know, which you throw some sauce on it. It's not even dressing. We call it sauce. Why are you eating uncooked vegetables with sauce?
But when you put it that way,
you know, and
yeah.
So and even cheese, you know, like that was very novel to have pizza in Taiwan at a certain point. You know, now it's super popular, but so for us, you know, as immigrants in the 80s 90s, like, you know, it was so novel, so American.
Okay.
All those three things. All you can eat, what no one is breathing down your neck telling you can't keep going. This is the American dream. It is a land of plenty.
That's so amazing. And I think Michelle has had a similar experience, even though she's white as it gets, just like me, that when her family went to Sizzler when she was growing up, she was allowed to put any toppings on her ice cream.
Yeah. It is the ultimate expression of sort of the quintessential American spirit, freedom of choice.
And like lots of it.
And lots of it. Exactly. No limits. Yes. America. Yes. The frontier is forever. You know, like it's just, that's how it feels.
Totally.
That's how it felt. And you know, everyone could sort of get their own thing and taste it. And it was like relatively cheap. God forbid we actually get a drink or an actual entree.
Oh, okay.
We were very restricted. It was like, you just get what they say you're supposed to get, which is the soup and salad bar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be enough for you, Jenny.
And it would be, right? Because the salad bar was like, it's like the broadest definition of salad bar.
Yes. I'm trying to remember, but lots of probably canned baby corn,
mm-hmm.
You know, sunflower seeds,
mm-hmm.
Iceberg lettuce mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah.
But there was also cheese bread.
Right.
You always ask for cheese bread, which is yes. this really cheese toast.
Oh my God.
Which was so good.
You just made me so hungry.
Cheese toast yeah. is super crusty, almost yeah. like industrial strength crust on one side and the fluffiest white processed bread on the other side.
Love it.
Right. And you just chomp on there and it was so satisfying because it crunched and it was like salty and just like, it was almost like concentrated Parmesan with paprika on it or something.
That's probably exactly what it was. Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
Amazing.
Looking back, you know, where you just like, you know, like the way that people would like bake up like those like lacy cheese cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's what it tasted like, but on a little, like a thin slice of fluffy white bread.
So can I show you, remember when we were interacting on Twitter and I showed you that gif of the Sizzler waiter presenting a plate?
Yes.
There's a whole industrial video that comes from. Can I show it to you?
Yes, please.
It's a little bit long, but the greatest hits moments are like throughout.
Yeah.
So
let's do this. All across America, the song of freedom rings. The song is growing stronger every day. It tells us when we listen to the message that it sings. Let us lift our voices. We can make the choices. We will make the most of all the best. That freedom brings. Sizzler is the one who brings us choices. Reaching out across the USA.
All over America, a quiet revolution has been taking place. More and more, both parents are working and raising families. Life seems to be moving faster than ever, and Americans have rediscovered, are redefining what's really important in their lives. They want quality in their personal life, in their business life, in the goods they purchase, and in the food they eat. They want good, basic home cooking, quality food, and they want choices, variety, all at a reasonable price. Americans want value.
The choices that you've been looking for.
And everyone's victorious because they've had Salad Bar.
Oh my God. I am dumbfounded.
I know. It's that really something.
The music for this 5-minute long video, which is 4 minutes too long, reminds me of that very patriotic, wannabe inspirational song, Proud to Be an American.
Yes.
Because I'm proud to be an American.
Absolutely. And I think it's from the same era.
Yeah.
And as Dave Holmes pointed out in his piece, 1991 is also the year that Scientology released that Super Up With People style video that has the same type of music.
Oh.
It was the early 90s. I'm making this up. Like, grunge was starting to happen, and the squares were really worried because grunge people were a lot like hippies, and they're like, well, we got to nip this in the bud. So they started acting like there was a war on. Well, there was a war on, the Iraq War.
Yeah.
So it was basically the late 60s all over again.
You know, constantly we're trying to decimate American cultural institutions. So,
yes.
You know, the quiet revolution of Sizzler is that.
It's a counter-revolution.
It is. It is a way to give you home cooking in a busy life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now millennials are ruining chain restaurants.
They are.
Everyone knows it.
I mean, millennials are to blame for everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I feel like that commercial just confirmed how American I perceived Sizzlers to be.
No, I think you're totally right.
Their marketing worked.
Yes.
It totally worked on us as immigrants. We're like, the land of plenty.
Yeah.
With a coupon. It worked.
That's America summed up. So no one really knows who invented salad bars.
I'm so disappointed. I expect a high level of journalistic research from you.
Okay, but that's what you're getting because I look through it and there are 5 million people who are like, I did it. And I can tell you about those people.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like, for instance, the Yellow Pages in 1951 for Illinois. They have a listing for a salad bar buffet. This is in 1951.
Wow.
It was in Springfield and it was called The Cliffs. But then Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, they say that the term salad bar didn't even originate until 1973. The dictionary is straight up wrong.
Oh, it's totally wrong. But then, I mean, we all know that the dictionary is has a little lag.
I think that they've caught up for sure. And also, here's another thing. I've actually gotten in a fight with other adults about this. They're like, it's in the dictionary. It's fact. I'm like, much like the Bible, good sir. Dictionaries are written by humans.
Yeah.
They have their opinions about things.
Totally.
And their biases. And so, but that's what one dictionary says and is clearly wrong. I have a guess that it actually comes from two cultural things. One of them is the military and eating from mess halls. So basically cafeterias.
Self-service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then especially when you consider that this started in like the late 40s, 1950s, would be right when GIs were getting back and thinking of businesses to start.
Totally.
And recreating that. And then also, this is totally unexpected, but Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, has come up so much more over the course of this podcast than I ever would have expected. It like low-key has such an influence on culture. I think they do it by like just keeping their heads down and just like they're the ringer in everything. But in Wisconsin, there's this institution called the Supper Club. And it's not an elegant supper club the way us coastal elites will think of it. It's like a where people who live in a small town go for dinner. And it's very straightforward. And it's where they have relish trays. Are you familiar with relish trays? They're hilarious. So the way the Wisconsin Supper Club works is that you go in and you sit at the bar and you can actually order your food at the bar and then they won't serve it until you get to your table.
Yeah, because you have your pre-dinner drink.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where apparently a lot of people think old fashions were invented in these supper clubs.
Yeah.
And they're in Wisconsin, they're always brandy old fashions.
Mm.
And they think it's like a post-prohibition, well, this is what we have, let's use it.
Yeah.
And that's why they add fruit and sugar to it to make it more palatable.
Sure.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah. So you would sit down and waiting on your table would be a relish tray, which is a collection of vegetables.
Pickled stuff?
Sometimes pickled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a big part of it. So the supper clubs existed before the salad bars.
I believe that.
Okay. Yes. And part of what every restaurant owner who does salad bar model is all about like it gives the customer a feeling that they are controlling their dining experience because it's on their timeline.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. They don't have to ask anyone else mm-hmm. to give me an extra side of cherry tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sure it cuts down on the shame factor if you want to go back for more canned peaches.
Totally.
You don't have to tell anyone about it.
Exactly. You know, civilized culture is you wait for everyone else to get there first before you get your second.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, just go at it.
Yeah. Freaking free for all.
Yeah.
No rules, dude.
Totally.
Oh, man. So the Sky Club in Plover, Wisconsin, they say that they had the first salad bar ever. It was in 1950. And the early menus that they still have, here's the instructions, I guess, for how to eat there. Quote, all dinners include as many trips to our famous salad bar as you wish, choice of potatoes and beverage, a whole loaf of homemade bread, garlic toast, carrot bread too. Tell the waitress what you want for dessert. It goes with your dinner.
Wow, that sounds so good.
I know.
I'm in. I would
so many
there.
Breads.
So many breads. Starch on starch.
Yes.
The Midwest. See, I could trust the Midwest to, yeah. to really
yeah.
make sure we triple up on the starches.
Right. They just want everyone to eat well.
I love it. And I believe that. I feel like if that's, you know, if that's where we are in terms of the primary source documents,
mm-hmm.
then I believe it.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, 1950s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's another guy who didn't start his salad bar until 1964, and this was in Florida, but he specifically said that he got the idea from the officers' club in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Like,
so, you know, maybe there's parallel thinking. People have those experiences in the military
mm-hmm.
and said, we could just do this here in America.
Yeah, I think so. And I bet that they were like, do it like an officer's club, but like with a little bit better food.
Yes.
Would be my guess.
Totally.
I've never been in the military, but I understand that the food is not the draw.
Right. Mess halls.
Yes, exactly.
That makes total sense.
There's a restaurant group in Chicago. It's called Let Us Entertain You. And funnily enough, the Ryan Arnold, who has been a guest on the show talking about wine and Mongolian barbecue, he works for that restaurant group. It started in the 1970s and it still exists.
Wow. It really committed to that pun branding, huh?
Yes, they really did. I believe that they've gone a little bit more upscale because one of their like signature restaurant at first was actually a singles bar.
Ooh.
It was called, get ready for this, it was like a name, a man's name, RJ Grunts.
What?
Yeah.
Why
heading out
would
to
we...
RJ Grunts to get laid and have some salad bar.
Okay. How long did that last? Because what single hetero lady would show up at RJ Grunts to be like, I want to come here because I want to make RJ Grunt.
What? Here's the thing. I can expound on this at length, and I have, and I will. Not today, but like in life. The 1970s were the most disgusting decade in the history of the world. This is my thesis.
Was that when Hooters was invented?
You know, I don't actually know.
I feel like RJ Grunts.
RJ Grunts, and Hooters, same thing.
Yeah,
for sure. No, but the bars really reflect that. And what's funny, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm so excited to talk about how disgusting the 70s were.
Yeah.
So the restaurant that really like kind of codified how salad bar restaurants should be run was a chain that still exists, I think, called Steak and Ale.
Oh, I feel like I've heard that.
Yeah, for sure. It's around. It wasn't invented until the late 1960s, so it was a relative latecomer. However, the guy who founded it, his name was Norman Brinker. And he, for better or for worse, had a lot of really interesting ideas that absolutely revolutionized American restaurants.
Ooh.
And it infiltrated from like low end to high end, all of his ideas. So I bring him up right now because one of his restaurant inventions was Bennigan's.
Oh.
Which was in the 1970s, and it was started as a fern bar. Are you familiar with the term fern bar?
No.
Did you watch Three's Company?
Oh, yes.
So the fern bar, what was it called? The Eager Beaver? Is that what it was?
I don't
Beagle.
Remember.
The Beagle, not the Beaver.
Okay.
But they do that on purpose.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. Because they're all these free-willing, free-loving youngins.
So the fern bars literally had ferns in them. Like as a decor.
Okay.
Because ferns thrive in low light. Oh. So they would decorate them with ferns and do that faux Tiffany glass and lots of dark wood.
Oh, I'm not familiar with this
whole
look.
Yes. And so it became like the singles scene because early 1970s was also the beginning of the era where women could go out into public spaces, into restaurants unescorted and not be considered disgusting.
Right.
Probably by some they still were. But you know, it was like a whole sexual revolution thing. So, like, fern bars, how unsexy can you get? But that's, like, people were just raring to go in the 70s.
They didn't care. They're like, let's just slap up whatever easy foliage.
Yes.
We'll thrive in the dark.
Yeah. That's when all those drinks, like grasshoppers and pink squirrels.
I don't know what that is.
Basically milkshakes with alcohol in them. But, like, not in a delicious way because that can be done so well. But these were, I think, meant to just get you fucked up and
really
not
fast.
Know it. Yeah. Harvey Wallbangers or just orange juice and alcohol.
Yeah. See, I am definitely not as I'm not as educated with the cocktails.
Which I think is fine. I do think it's funny. Sometimes bars now will do like reimaginings of the 70s classic cocktails. And it's always hilarious because it's really hard to do because those drinks were not great.
I mean, would you really want to drink them, you know?
Yes. Well, this is also the era where like all the drinks, even like Harvey Wallbanger, like that name is... gross.
Was this really a person named Wallbanger?
No.
Obviously not,
no.
Jenny. Why do you even ask?
Yeah. Sex on the Beach.
Sex on the Beach.
That's
okay,
a drink.
That yeah.
I mean, it's because of the 70s they thought they were so naughty to say that phrase
That's
out
true.
Loud. Oh, God. I just, you know, I love the music of that decade. I think it was, but if you ever listen to the lyrics of like yacht rock songs,
yeah.
They're so fucking horrifying.
Oh, my God.
They're all about leaving your wife to bang 15-year-olds.
Oh, my God,
unbelievable.
No.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, I get it then. So, you're drawing me into the culture. I'm seeing myself in a fern bar. That's why it was like the, you know, fresh from the sexual revolution.
Yes.
Women and men were like, we can be cheeky and open about talking about sex. So, let's go to this fern bar.
Yeah.
I'm going to sidle up to the bar and say, excuse me, sir. I would like a sex on the beach.
Exactly.
So that you could be like, teehee.
Yes.
And then wink, wink to the person next to
you. Yes.
Let's go fuck.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. You totally get it.
Okay.
You would have thrived.
Obviously.
You couldn't have worn a bra. That would be important.
I know. Though. You don't even have to wear a bra back then, right?
Oh, God. I think it's such a gift to wear a bra.
It is. I know. If you have boobs bigger than bees, I mean. Know.
Or even then, man. I don't know. But that's just me. I like being strapped the fuck down. I don't like that bouncing. It's so uncomfortable.
I'm learning so. I did not know I learned about fern bars.
Yeah, I learned from like my bra references to you being like, I'm learning so much.
Sizzlers, salad bars.
It's all, you know, it's American.
It's all connected.
We get sex and food confused so much. So it would make sense. I know. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So anyway, back to old Norman Brinker.
Yeah.
With the Bennigans, but more famously, the steak and ale. And he. This is among his many innovations. He was the one who had servers go up to tables and be like, "Hi, I'm Betty, and I'll be your server tonight." That was him.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
That was like his innovation. He would hire young people and have them be cheerful.
Yeah.
And part of that was introducing themselves.
Yes.
Because this is where you come with your family and you're comfortable here.
For the hospitality.
Yes. Yep. It's setting a tone and it's tricking people into believing it.
Yep.
So effective.
A small detail, but it
works.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So his whole idea was when you have – the salad bars were always – often marketed as steakhouses, because if you hear the term steakhouse, you think luxury, you think upscale, and then surprise, it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're winning on all fronts. This guy was a genius in like kind of a dark way, but definitely a genius.
A business genius.
So Steak and Ale's menus at first, where it would normally say menu, it said bill of fare for lords and ladies. So again, all of a sudden you're elegant.
Is this the Renaissance Fair? What's happening here?
Yeah.
Are we in the royal court?
He wanted you to think that you were.
Oh, look at that.
And the salad bar was described, like going to the salad bar was described as a salad of your own making. So again, you're lord of your domain.
Wow. You're the self-made American.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. So, and again, with the like control, like you're in control of everything. That's why you get up to go to the salad bar.
Yeah.
And the servers were trained to not give the order to the kitchen until you had gone to the salad bar. So they would take your order, but not immediately bring it to the kitchen. They would have to like keep tabs on you and wait until you had made a trip. Your whole table had made a trip to the salad bar.
And what's the logic behind that? So that the timing of the main dish, the protein arrives after the salad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then he would do stuff like steak was not more expensive than chicken there, which was revolutionary at the time. Because the cost would amortize off the other things. He didn't include any sides.
So his steak was a loss leader.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And then the rest was what he made his money on.
But he would charge for the baked potatoes.
Yes.
Which hadn't been done before.
Right.
And other quote-unquote side items like corn on the cob.
Okay, so baked potatoes and – okay, because before people just assumed you would get a potato.
Yeah.
Because
in most like white American-style restaurants, you get a whole plate filled with things. And it's assumed, but he was like, nope.
So in a way, he was saying, but there was an all-you-can-eat salad bar connected to this.
Uh-huh.
So that's true. So he gaveth and he tooketh.
Yes.
Right? So he a la carted some stuff. And then the rest, he said, free reign.
Yeah.
Let me give you all the cheap corn, baby corn out of a can that you want.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make you feel good? You're a lord of your domain.
Exactly.
See, look at what a... Brilliant. See, that's so American. That's such a brilliant American marketing ploy.
Yeah. It's using really genius level ideas. Like, I feel like if
psychology.
He had just been a psychologist, he would have been, probably would have done evil in a different way. But he used that brilliance for purely capitalistic purposes. He became like the guy was kind of amazing. He was a polo player and he was thrown off a horse and in a coma for 3 weeks.
What?
And he got out of the coma and was told he would never walk again. And he was fully functional within 4 months. Yeah.
And then he was like, life's too short. I'm going
to
take over the restaurant industry.
He was married 4 times. His third wife was the sister of Susan G. Komen, who was the woman who died of cancer. And his wife founded that charity her name at his suggestion.
Wow.
He was best friends with Ross Perot.
My bad.
He's just...
Okay, you lost me.
All over the place.
What a character this guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he would...
I bet you he was like, he saw himself as a, I'm a real, I think outside of the box kind of guy.
Absolutely. And he definitely thought he was a wonderful person because he would tell an anecdote about how, well, I mean, come on, he was a capitalist.
Yeah.
But he would always tell this anecdote. I saw a couple times an anecdote about him going to a restaurant to do like a visit, a site visit, and then a busboy being like, I have some thoughts. And him missing his flight because he sat down at the table with the busboy and he heard him out.
So that's the story he likes to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's dead now, but that he liked to tell, yes. So also the food that salad bars serve. I don't know if other Americans ate canned peaches and cottage cheese together. Yeah. Like, I don't know how common that actually was in home cooking, you know, by the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these salad bars at these chain restaurants are serving kind of mid-century food.
Right. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Completely. And they if you want to get like, oh God, here's one thing that came from, where did this come? Oh, from Sky Club. They apparently originated the goblet salad. You know, the Midwest loves to call everything a salad. It's ground gizzards with sour cream and parsley. That's it. It's a real delicacy, apparently, from the Sky Club. You're so upset.
It's just a little disturbing.
Cheese spreads. Not cheese, but cheese spread with saltines. And then Watergate salad. Also
What's
known,
Watergate salad?
It's also known as green stuff. It's pistachio pudding with various nuts and fruits and sour cream inside
pudding
of it.
Pudding as in what kind of pudding?
Like Jell-O pudding.
What?
Yeah.
Pistachio pudding with?
Canned pineapple, sometimes actual pistachios in it or maybe walnuts. You put some sour cream in there. You mix it up. I'm sorry. Are you not familiar with Jell-O salads?
No. I mean, I feel like I've seen it across the internet.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to imagine all of this. I wonder why they called it a Watergate salad.
I think it's actually a thing where it existed before it was named
that. Oh, yeah.
My best understanding of it is that this is a thing people ate. And then a woman published a cookbook that had it in it. And she published it in like 1975
yeah.
or whatever. And she was like, Watergate salad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because wow. It's all about branding.
So yeah, it's like, yeah, a lot of mid-century stuff. Because I even, when I think about it, my favorite current salad bar is mm-hmm. Soup Plantation Sweet Tomatoes here mm-hmm. in California. Mm-hmm. And they still serve cottage cheese.
Yeah.
Who's eating the cottage cheese?
I mean, I don't know.
No one is eating cottage cheese anymore.
I've never been able to eat cottage cheese.
I can eat cottage cheese because my Mexican-American friend taught me that they ate it as a snack with Doritos, nachos cheese Doritos, as a dip.
As a dip, I feel like I'm leaning into it a little
bit more. It's so good because it just amplifies the nacho cheese flavors into a creaminess.
And that's what you want.
Dude, I'm telling you, that's like weird immigrant combo food that I have definitely shared with some of my friends.
I love it.
That's like one of them.
Okay. Yeah. That I get. A thing that you'll see when you're reading old like newspaper articles about salad bars, they keep talking about the croutons.
Okay.
I can't figure out if salad bars invented croutons and people were totally freaked out by them, or that can't be it because croutons are just a vehicle to use up bread that would have otherwise gone stale or had gone stale.
So maybe it was the salad bar that promoted it as a tasty thing.
I mean,
thing.
I guess, because I can't find like an explanation of it. It's just that if you read an article like talking about like the new restaurant in town is the salad bar, it's like, and they've got croutons. It's like,
whoa,
so exciting. It's a mystery to me.
Fascinating. Maybe it was just so new.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I couldn't figure that one out. That one's, if anyone knows, let me know.
But I mean, maybe it is true that the salad bar industry kind of invented the crouton. You know, maybe
croutons, maybe, but panzanella is
sure,
Italian bread salad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's soaked up, right? It's kind of mixed in, no?
Yeah, but that happens with homemade croutons too.
That's true.
If you get the store bought, you know, you got to coat them in all the preservatives.
True. So maybe it was their way. Maybe panzanella was only specific to maybe Italian Americans.
Yeah,
but,
maybe.
But, you know, it was up to someone from Wisconsin to say, I'm going to do a salad bar.
Yes.
And guess what? We're going to make this very economically viable. We're going to take our leftover breads because we serve five different kinds.
Yes.
And we're going to make it into croutons. We're going to market it as a total delicacy.
That sounds totally logical.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Soup Plantation, you know that's actually from California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, San Diego. I'm familiar.
It was started by a bartender in 1978.
Oh, get out, bartender. You go ahead with yourself.
I know.
Okay, bartender. I like that that's part of the research lore.
Well, let me tell you. Bartender. It was important to me to include that because I would bet you $5 million that he worked at a fern bar. Because I just feel like there's such an overlap between salad bar culture and fern bar culture.
Maybe it's just bar culture, no?
I mean, I guess. I just, you know, it's me. I have a hang up about the 70s. I'm like so.
What's your hang up about the 70s? Do we need to explore this?
The fact that it's so disgusting.
This is a food podcast, but I think it's time for us to interrogate your latent feelings toward the 70s.
All I can say off the, you know, at first glance, I know that I started becoming obsessed with the 70s when I was in like fifth grade, and it was through disco.
Yeah.
I love disco. I'm a huge fan. And yeah. And then like in my 20s, I think that the term yacht rock, you're familiar, yes. Right? Like it's a backdated thing. I think that the term yacht rock came about when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And so through the term, I became familiar with the genre of music. Yeah. So like 70s to early 80s, I am all about it.
Yeah.
But my love for it, it's like loving a person. I recognize its flaws.
Yes.
And I just... And then if you go back to the 60s, I think the sexual revolution was a complete lie.
Yeah.
It was a trick. And the 70s was like the fallout of it. And just everyone was being horrifying.
Yeah. I feel like this is the topic of a totally different podcast.
I know.
You should start another one just about...
My issues.
With the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah.
The culture wars. Right.
The oldies, greatest hits, and Catherine's feelings about them.
I know. No, but I mean, it is. I mean, food is part and parcel with the, you know, the culture of the times.
Mm-hmm.
So it, I think it only makes sense. I'm sure your hunch about the connection between a fern bar and the salad bar is probably on point.
Well, the fact that, you know, soup plantation actually comes from Southern California means that there's a higher probability that someone who was involved with its creation has listened to this podcast, because a lot of our listeners are in Southern California, yeah. Unsurprisingly. So if anyone wants to call in and be like, he was not, then like, let me know. But his name was Dennis J.
Dennis J?
Yeah, if anyone knows him, I don't know if he's still alive or what, but I would love to know more about it and meet him if he's still around.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's also funny that it's called Soup Plantation only in California.
And only in Southern California.
Is it called Sweet Tomatoes in Northern California?
It's Sweet Tomatoes in Central California and north of us.
See, this is one of the things, one of the reasons why people think Southern Californians are stupid. Because we're so like airy,
yeah,
that we don't even know when something's problematic.
Oh, totally. No, I grew up with Soup Plantation in Torrance. Mm-hmm. And we would go after volleyball games with my team, with my family. To this day, it's the only real Western food other than Islands Burgers that my mom and dad will like go to. That's not Chinese food.
Amazing.
So I'll take them all the time with a little discount.
The discount, of course. Because I grew up in Seattle, but I have wonderful memories of Soup Plantation, the one in Torrey Pines.
Oh, okay.
Specifically because my lacrosse team every year in high school would come down for a tournament.
Oh, wow. My bad, lacrosse.
And every day after a full day, you know, teenagers.
Yes.
Lacrosse. 90 degree weather.
Totally.
We would go to Soup Plantation and just fuck shit up.
Yeah, you just crush the bar.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Totally.
I'm sure we were so upsetting when the employees saw us coming. Like,
totally.
Run for the hills.
Totally. We did that with our summer double workouts for volleyball.
Yeah.
And then we go just sweaty and just hormonal. And
oh
just,
my God, I forgot about that. We must have smelled so bad.
Yeah, just pheromone cloud. Just infecting Jones broccoli madness.
Yeah, you know?
God, it just, we would crush it because you can get, they had some, there was some protein, you know, there was like.
Well, so if anyone hasn't been there, I feel so sorry for you. But the setup is that you walk in and there's a line on like a, you can walk in on either side of a row of salads. And it's probably 12 salads, six on either side.
Yeah.
Or actually, they probably have the same
ones
on
each side. It's the same exact on either side. Yeah.
So you can go down and get pre-made salad.
Yep.
And I'm sure it's like Caesar salad. Chinese chicken salad.
They changed it to Oriental salad.
After Chinese?
I know.
Well, that's a choice.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you can get the pre-made salad. So you buy the salad, but then you also, and then you pay at the register and then you go in.
Yep.
To the actual salad bar where you can make your own salads. But please, by that point, you're getting pizza.
Yeah.
You're getting breadsticks.
Muffins.
Muffin. Brownies. Oh my God, the corn muffins.
Their muffins are so good.
Oh, I forgot about those.
And I take literally six different soup bowls on a tray.
Yes.
I'm always getting the clam chowder, always getting the deep house kettle chili.
You got to have a sampler, soup sampler.
The chicken noodle soup with just the soup, the broth. They've been innovating on their minestrone.
Have they?
They have been. Variations on the theme of. Sometimes they've experimented with an Asian ginger chicken broth.
Oh, say.
That the Yang family was very impressed by.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good endorsement.
They have taken away the bacon bits because they realized people were overloading with bacon.
Oh my God, I bet that cost a lot.
Yeah.
Here's where I think, whatever, we did damage the whole way, but I think in my lacrosse team, and it was the boys' lacrosse team too.
Yeah.
This was a lot of teenagers at once, but they've got the frozen yogurt.
Yes. And then at the end, there's some fruit maybe. There's some cottage cheese and jello, but no, you're really there for the soft serve.
Yeah. And you just go back, get that swirl.
Get the swirl. I put
it many times as you want.
I put it on a brownie, bunch of nuts.
My God.
Listen.
You know what's up.
When you decide to take a citizenship test and commit to really embracing what it means to be American,
yeah,
you go all the way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And so Sioux Plantation, man, there's so many hacks. There are full blogs about this.
You know, that's totally right. Being a citizen isn't just about knowing what the three branches of government do.
No.
It's about friggin' chain restaurant hacks.
Yeah. And it's about what are the proteins that they're putting on the side that you can overexploit to the point where they decide to pull it away because you've messed up their business model. Bacon bits are bits for a reason. Yeah. It's not your main protein.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that. I've never been to the soup plantation that still exists at the Beverly Connection.
Yes, I've been
not
there.
Even the Beverly Center, the Beverly Connection. But now I want to go there.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. There were other salad bars that would do. So like Soup Plantation, it has the pre-made salads and then the everything. It's more in the Sizzler. Well, actually, I'm going to get back to that in a second. Never mind. Let me move on to there was one called Chuck's Steakhouse that only had 6 menu items.
Whoa.
So keep it pared down.
Yeah.
Go nuts on the salad bar.
Yes.
Very specifically. It's set out to do that.
Yeah.
The only side that you could get for your meat was baked potato.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Roy Rogers, the chain of fast food restaurants.
I've heard
it's more
them.
Of an East Coast thing.
Yeah.
And they kind of, this is like where the salad bar model starts to like move into different directions. So what you would do, you get a hamburger, a cheeseburger, a chicken burger, or a roast beef sandwich.
Yeah.
And you move your tray down a line and you pull it out of a group, like wrapped in foil, you pay for it. And then you go to the fixins bar.
To add your, customize your own fixins.
Yes. But here's the thing. People would use that as a salad bar. This was not the intention of Roy Rogers himself or subsequent owners, but people would just like make a little salad out of all the toppings, all the fixins, excuse me. Yeah. So when Sizzler started, it was like, we serve you meat and potatoes and there's also a salad bar.
Yeah.
But by the early 90s, salad bars were really buffets.
Yes.
They'd really switched.
Totally.
Really not anything salad-y about them, really.
No, there was all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the New York Times wrote an article in 1994 by Florence Fabricant, who is still with the paper.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary. It was about salad bars, and the first sentence was, "The salad bar has bent the meaning of salad entirely out of shape."
That's a good quote.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, but then didn't the Midwest already do that with the term salad, with their Jell-O and stuff?
Listen, salad, God, someone could write a book about it. It is a really fraught term in America. Yeah. It means nothing and everything.
Yes.
All the time. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's out of control. So she went on to say that the typical salad bar has lasagna, barbecue chicken, sushi, mashed potatoes.
What?
Yeah.
Sushi? No, that's a buffet. That's like the Asian buffets have sushi.
But that's her point, though, is that they were still being called salad bars. But they were really actually buffets.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's on your side.
Yeah.
For sure. One place called Manja sold 3,000 pounds a week of salad bar items.
Yeah.
They sold them for $6 a pound. It would probably be like $20 a pound now.
Oh, wow.
This was in 1994.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were just taking over. Okay. And the Sizzler informational video that we just watched. It was mostly shots of people standing around the like four different quote-unquote bars.
Yeah.
Italian bar. Yeah. They had it like down to different nationalities, the dessert bar, etc. It really was like a buffet restaurant that they were calling a salad bar, maybe to make it seem healthier because
yeah,
they had never changed the name. They didn't want to switch from salad bar to buffet, whatever. Okay, this... was it the same article? All I have is the same year as the New York Times article. I think it was the same one.
Yeah.
It ends with some quotes from research consulting companies,
yeah,
marketing consultancies. One guy said, "The whole health thing of the 80s is over. The lean cuisine has been replaced by double cheeseburgers and extra rich Haagen-Dazs ice cream." So funny to me.
Man, these forecasters, they just need to declare a change so they can get paid.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And then another person from an industry magazine called Restaurants and Institutions. So the most amazing thing, this is like so rude. As the population ages, they have resigned themselves to gaining a few pounds.
The hell is this?
So they were just making shit up about the fact that, you know, salad bars had so many options on it. And they were like, everyone's just a fat fuck anyway. That's all it is. And I just think
let's just give them what they want.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. In retrospect, I think that's so wild for a couple of reasons. One of them is that looking back to the 90s now, we're like, man, you people were afraid of fat.
Yes.
It was anything but. Also, they were so afraid of fat, but now we're coming around to the idea that it's actually sugar that's bad for you and fat is fine.
Right.
So the idea that people are being like, oh, they just didn't care. They'll eat fat. They're like, oh, good.
Yeah.
I mean, that we know now that that's probably actually a good thing. And in fact, it's not what they were doing in the 90s.
No. That the 90s, I feel like, was when they thought, oh, if it has zero fat, it's okay, right?
Yeah.
So carbs are fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Preservatives, mm-hmm. All kinds of sugar, snack wells.
I know, snack wells.
I know, right?
It was just all like sugar,
yeah,
and no zero fat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't understand. I think about my grandma in this context a lot because she was always worried about getting fat, so she would always eat low fat and then still be worried about how she'd gained weight. It's
yeah.
Like, well, so stop eating the low fat stuff.
You know what? We're not going to be able to solve America's problems.
That's all I want. I don't know why it's so hard.
You know, the salad bar buffet is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea, the concept has spread across the world.
Oh, do you know the only – you're going to be able to guess this. The only country in the world where Sizzler is growing as a company.
Where?
China. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Basically, here's the thing. I experienced what it was like to be a little immigrant girl coming to America and sort of being a fish out of water and encountering Western American things and abundance.
Mm-hmm.
I am only imagining what it's like to be now in mainland China encountering that at hyperspeed.
Yes.
Essentially. And it's really scary to me.
No, it would give you whiplash.
It's so intense. Like, just, I came when I was 5 years old, but I still remember these sort of fresh feelings and like the cultural dissonance, you know, of encountering Western food and mm-hmm. culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember that, you know. I was the one that was the center of my story, but it was America that was weird.
You know?
So, yeah, you cook, what, casseroles in ovens? That's weird. You know, you eat peanut butter and jelly together. Ugh, that's weird, you know?
Yeah.
Y'all have freckles? What is that? You know, like, it's just like all these different things. Yeah.
But I love that. I love – it's good for people who haven't ever moved to a different country to remember that, like, our shit is weird too.
Exactly. I mean, it really is just who's telling the story.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Who gets to tell the story?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean
– looking from the outside in, salad bars are bonkers.
Oh, insane.
They're so indulgent.
Yeah.
They have a misleading name. We're all lying to ourselves. Like, yeah. The options are really disparate. They don't make any sense together.
No.
And we put them all on the same plate, like animals. Oh, my gosh. So do you think that they're uniquely American, right? Is that accurate? Even though yes. They're growing in China, but...
No, I feel like you've researched what the origins are.
I hope so.
You know, the cultural values that are embodied by a salad bar. Mm-hmm. I knew from the get-go,
yeah,
so many immigrants did, that it was a very American thing.
Yeah.
And that was our little treat. We never ate out. That was our little treat, to use that coupon for like a $5.99 salad bar and to go as a family to experience America. That was my first time eating mashed potatoes at bar buffet, yeah, in America. You know, we didn't eat potatoes. That's just our experience. That was our first real experience of like dining out in America.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you on social media?
Well, jennyyang.tv, that's JennyYang.tv is my main website. And all my socials use the handle at JennyYangTV.
Perfect. Awesome. And everyone should follow her because she does really funny stuff. The thing where you were eating chips really fast, I laughed and I laughed and I watched it again. Aww.
I mean, I will do anything with food for a laugh.
Ugh, I totally feel you on that one. Awesome. Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'd really love to see you tonight. I won't ask for promises, so you don't have to lie. Say I love you, then say